I was watching a documentary on the Beach Boys. Brian Wilson, he was the mastermind behind the Beach Boys. They referred to him as a genius, his ability to write songs, his ability to compose music. And I don't know if you like the Beach Boys or not, but I sort of enjoy them, their music. But in this documentary, Brian Wilson talked about periods of his life where he was deviled, as if, you know, and it was sort of strange that, of course, I heard about a documentary, they sold their souls for rock and roll, and where there was a specific place, though, where Route 66, some type of crossroads or something, where, and this is documented with Led Zeppelin, several huge stars that they sell their soul for rock and roll. And they actually said that this guy came back and said his ability to play was incredible. Just out of nowhere, he could play this guitar. And of course, it's debatable about the singing issue, but I guess I'm thinking right here, have you ever thought of yourself as being deviled? I mean, as if the devil was after you, as if you ever questioned that? I mean, I think in all of our lives, at least the called of God, the elect of God, there's times when you have to consider this. Is this just something within my own weakness, my own personal struggles, or am I being deviled? A lot of us spend a lot of time guarding our material possessions. I have a set of keys. I probably couldn't tell you what half these keys go to. One day I may figure it out. But each one of those keys represent that we have something of value, and we know that there's thieves out there that would steal our stuff. I mean, that's why I've got all these keys. All kinds of keys. Each one represents something of value. And I don't want anybody getting my stuff, stealing my stuff, because it's valuable to me. And, you know, we carry all these. You ever lose your keys?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I think they ought to make a GPS for keys, you know, just the whole, where are my keys? I don't know how many. I even have another key to my utility building. I mounted it to a piece of stick about this big so that I can always find it. It's a big stick, one key on a big stick. I lock up my truck. I was pulled up to a job, and you know the home was right there, and I hit my beeper, and the contractor said, "You're locking your truck?" I said, "Well, I got some valuables in there. I just got me a new iPad. I got a computer. I got cameras. I got tools, equipment. I probably got $2,000 or $3,000 worth of stuff in that truck." So I said, "It's valuable stuff in there." I said, "Yes, I keep it locked." And you know, sometimes you have like a safe in your home where you really, you know, keep some of the more valuable things. Maybe like if you got some gold or money or guns or jewelry, you'll put them in a safe. And you really want to protect stuff that's really valuable to you. Of course, if I go over to Angela and Ronnie's home, they have this system where you know, it's a security system. You walk in the door and it will say, "Garage door open." It talks to you. And it actually helped them from burning their house up one time. Angela left a pot of water, a pot of something on the stove, and it started smoking. And it automatically called the fire station and, you know, probably kept them from burning their house up. But again, we know that we have something of value, and we know that there are thieves loose in the world. So what I want to consider today is guarding your most precious spirit of God that you have. You know, the Bible tells us not to grieve the Holy Spirit. Are you as concerned about guarding that precious spirit as you are your material stuff? If every time you locked your door, if every time you took your keys out and you thought, okay, this is material, but what about the Spirit of God? Are we concerned about guarding the most precious thing that you have in the same way that we are our material things? John 10 and verse 10 says this. It says, "The thief comes not but for to steal and to kill and to destroy." I have come that they might have life and they might have it more abundantly. But the point is, there is a thief. And we know who the thief is. It's Satan and his demons. And they've come to steal, to kill, and destroy. That's their goal, is to kill, steal, and destroy you. Are you putting, are we putting something in and on and around yourself to guard your precious emotions, your spiritual life from the thief who wants to steal your very life? And I think we're a little bit off balance here. We focus on keeping the material safe, but we sometimes forget, man, what about the Spirit of God guarding the most precious thing that you have, the Spirit of God? You know, you were created in the image and likeness of God. And that's the only reason the thief wants to rob you. He wants to rob you of who you are, your identity. And he never gives up. He never sleeps. He never takes a break. He never takes a rest. I once watched a program, Stargate series, The Enemy Within was the title of this one movie, and I was fascinated by that one. They were all good, but one of the team workers, Kowalski, you know, they go through the Stargate to other worlds, and coming back over, they're getting ready to go back through the Stargate to planet Earth, and it was one of these, I think called a Gaol, which is like a worm snake-like thing that lives within the host, jumped off and entered in Kowalski. And he gets back to Earth, and he's got these headaches. He knows something's wrong, but he's not for sure. But anyway, these things just take over and possess the person totally. And, of course, this thing, this snake-like creature wraps around his spinal cord, and they operate, and the operation was successful. But they didn't get every little bit. And it ends up possessing the man and killing him in the end. And it was referred to as the enemy within. It was sort of an analogy of being possessed by something. It's a very powerful concept, the enemy within. And often I've asked, have you ever asked this question? Is it just me, the fact that we are our own worst enemy? Or is it a diabolical assault, what I'm going through? You know, if you go through a temptation, you go through a struggle, you know, is it just me, the fact that we are our own worst enemy? Or is this a diabolical assault? I've never been one to want to blame the devil for anything. You know, Flip Wilson said, the devil made me do it. And I've always thought religious people could carry that to the extreme, almost a ridiculous extreme of blaming everything on the devil. There used to be some nuts, a Radford group that I heard a story about them, religious people, and they, I forget how the story, I don't know if I actually, I don't think I heard this, but I heard the story about someone was choking on some peanut butter crackers and one of them screamed out, it's a peanut butter demon. I think that's extreme, you know. So I've never been one to want to blame the devil. On the other hand, which is the greater danger, to not believe that he's doing anything or to believe he's doing too much? I almost think the greatest danger is to believe that he's not doing anything in your life. So is it just me? Is it just you? Or is it a diabolical assault with some of the things that you go through? Now, a stronghold is something that, what we have to realize is this, the devil knows your past. If there is a stronghold in your life, it exists because Satan knows your past addictions, your past dysfunctional things that you've struggled with. The strongholds usually build in our youth, teenage years. They develop into patterns, behavior patterns, addictions. And if there is a stronghold in your life, it's because of things that has happened in your past. So, is it just you, or is it just me, or is it an assault? Well, let's take a look at this. 1 Peter 5 and verse 8. 1 Peter 5 and verse 8 tells us this. It says, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walks about seeking whom he may devour. Now, I don't know who's excluded from this. I don't know if you can say, well, I have the Spirit of God, therefore this doesn't apply to me. I mean, I don't even know if Satan even, you know, the ones before, people that are not called are not the enemy's threat. I mean, they're just out in the world and they're living in this worldly system that God, that Satan owns. They're not a threat. I think when you are singled out, when God calls you, you do become a threat. And I don't know at that moment if he ever really, our enemy, ever really gives up. This tells us, he says, look, that he walks about like a roaring lion, your adversary, the devil, seeking whom he may devour. And if there is something in your past that has given him a stronghold, he will try to use that to devour you, to destroy you, to take you out. So is it just me, or the fact that we are, or the fact that we're on our own worst enemy, or is it a diabolical assault? Well, again, I look at this verse and he says, look, this the devil goes about seeking whom he may devour. And again, when I talk about, are you guarding your most precious possession? The thief wants to destroy your life. I was reading a book and it said this. Listen to this. The devil is stalking you. He hates you. He is after your self-esteem, your identity, your mind, your emotions, your wife and children, your job, your business, your church, your well-being. Notice that, your well-being, your witness, your productivity, your health. That's what he's after. He's after everything that you value and hold as being good. Man, you know, I just want to, you know, I'm not really providing answers as to what to do about it, but I do want us to be aware of this battle. Everything that you value as good is what he's after. Ultimately, his goal is to destroy the destruction of your eternal spirit. Now, like I said, because of these strongholds often develop early in life before our calling, I think we think after our calling that it's still just me. In other words, the stronghold is developed before your calling. And then after your calling, we go through life and we struggle and we think, well, that's just my weakness, that's just my sin, that's just my struggle. And we don't realize how active he can be involved in our life. Like I said, you know, people that are not called, I don't think present a big threat to Satan. It's only once God calls you that you are targeted out. The crosshairs of a diabolical assault. I mean, think about that. As if you got a target on you. And he's after you. Are we aware of that? Now, I know our material possessions, we're concerned about them, keeping those safe from the enemy. But are we concerned about this issue and aware of it in our personal lives? Again, he is after your self-esteem, your identity, your mind, your emotions, your wife, your children, your job, your business, your church, your well-being, your witness, your productivity, your health. Let's turn to Ephesians 6 and verse 12. Because again, I've asked the question many times, is it just me or is it a diabolical assault? Notice what this verse tells us. Ephesians 6 and verse 12. It says, for we wrestle not against flesh and blood. And that in itself ought to just stop you right in your tracks when you think about it. Okay, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the ruler of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. That's what you're wrestling against. Now, when it says we wrestle not against flesh and blood, yeah, that could be somebody else, another person, but it's also saying that your battle is not you. So, I mean, what does that tell you? I mean, that tells you, man, there's something going on here. Spiritual wickedness in high places. Who's in control of your life? Every act of your life is motivated by a spiritual force. Who is controlling you? What is motivating you? What spirit is being satisfied through your body? You know, I think of demons. I often think of demons that they are disembodied spirits. Often because maybe they don't have bodies, they are seeking one. They want a body, you know. I mean, you remember the story of the demon-possessed man and legions? They said, well, look, if you cast us out of this man, can we go into the herd of swine? You know, they wanted a body. Pigs, of all things. Which tells you there were pig farmers back then. I'm getting off my point here. They must have been eating those things. I mean, 2,000 pigs, I mean, somebody had a farm of pigs. I mean, I don't think they were plowing with them or anything like that. They had to be eating those things. But, you know, you can imagine your livelihood destroyed like that in a moment, you know. There's 2,000 pigs go off the edge of the cliff. There goes my income for the year. Oh, me. You remember the story about Simon, what Jesus said to Simon? He said, "Behold, Satan has desired to have you that he may sift you as wheat." And again, sift you as wheat. I ask, have you ever felt like you've been deviled? Here's the scripture. It says, Satan, Jesus saying to Simon, he wants to sift you as wheat. He desires to possess you, to have you, to dominate you. Satan's demons desire the same thing regarding us, I believe. To use your body, your temper, your lust, your passions, to work through the broken places of your childhood, you know, to fulfill their desires. I mean, to possess you so that he might sift you. Now, I think before he makes a move, he studies you. He learns all that he can about you, your moods, your attitudes, your past hurts, your painful memories, your desires. But again, the concept, okay, he is stalking you. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walks about seeking whom he may devour. You could say you're under his surveillance. He's watching, he's looking, he's seeking. He longs to possess, dominate, control, rule over, and act through you. In other words, we provide the body. We carry out the actions of this, of these schemes, demons, whatever. Now I want to look at the three characteristics of a diabolical assault. And the story is found in Matthew 5 and verse 2. We'll start reading there. I'm going to pick up. It's the story of this demonic man. Three characteristics if you're under a diabolical assault. Let's take a look at what it is. What they are. Mark 5 and verse 2. You're never going to get there in Matthew. Mark 5 and verse 2. And when he was come out of the ship, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit, who had his dwellings among the tombs. First characteristic. Living in the grave of past behavior. The tomb of your past. Living in the grave instead of living in the power of the resurrection. The choice is yours. So living in the tomb, the grave of the past, repeating past things, behaviors, or living in the power of God's, of Jesus' resurrection. You know, we can be our own worst enemies. Sometimes we're killing ourselves living in the tombs. But that's a decision that we make. So I'm saying to identify this area. Mark 5 and verse 3, who had his dwelling among the tombs, and no man could bind him, no, not with chains. Second point of an assault. Out of control. Out of control. You know, sometimes we might as well wear a shirt that says, man out of control. Or woman out of control. All right, that's the second characteristic of a diabolical assault. He's out of control. The issue is one of control. You know, the word lasciviousness means unrestrained action. No limitations. Whatever flesh says, flesh gets. no boundaries. The lascivious man cannot be bound. Unrestrained action, out of control. Continuing on in verse 4. Because that he had been often bound with fetters and chains, and the chains had been plucked asunder by him and broken in pieces. I mean, this guy had supernatural power here, strength to do this. Neither could any man tame him. And always night and day he was in the mountains and in the tombs, crying and cutting himself with stones. Third characteristic, cutting yourself down. Cutting yourself down. I think that's the third characteristic of a diabolical assault. This man with an unclean spirit is a classic example of a man with an extremely, I think, low self-esteem. He didn't value himself. He didn't value himself. You know, the person who hates himself cannot love another. I mean, think about it. How can you give to others what you don't even have for yourself? And I just want to touch on, you know, what you think of yourself. I am talking about a self-image. What is your self-image? I know there's a lot of talk about that as if maybe that's not important, but it is important. Your view of yourself, your self-image. And often the vicious cycle is this. The more you yield to sin, the more you hate yourself, the more you cut yourself down. So it's just like a repeated cycle that goes on and on and on and on. And it is possible to be preoccupied. That can lead to a preoccupation with self-hatred. But, verse 6 says, but when he saw Jesus afar off, he ran and worshiped him. Now, I don't mean to oversimplify this, but, you know, Jesus Christ is the answer. And I just wanted to, you know, like I said, I'm not really offering solutions here. I just want you to be aware of the battle that we have. I think often God's people can be in the crosshairs of His scheming, His, just like a target on your back. I want us also to be concerned with guarding our spirit as we are with material things. We should be concerned, you know, at least equally concerned, if not more, actually more concerned. And I want you to realize that it's not just you, that Satan wants to devour God's people. Now, I mentioned a spiritual stronghold. Someone said that you can't drink it out, you can't smoke it out, you can't curse it out, you can't argue it out, you can't plead it out, but it can be cast out of your life. And that, you know, before you go to the judge, before you go to rehab center, before you go to counseling, go to God. Go to the altar of God and ask God to cast out any stronghold in your life. Someone put it like this, make Jesus the Lord of anything that is lording it over you.